Golf Smarter number 392, published on July 9, 2013, is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Your intent will impact ball striking success with Ken Doherty.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Ken.
Thank you.
It's good to have you back. I'm glad that you guys are keeping very good care of this golf course. I appreciate that. Gives me something to look at. I don't have to criticize anything.
Our superintendent does a great job.
Your superintendent does a very good job. How big is the staff?
Superintendent?
Yeah.
I believe he's got grounds about 15 working for him.
Grounds crew. So, because I noticed like at about 7:30, 8 o'clock, there are machines running around and there's three or four guys cleaning bunkers. And I got to imagine they're not the only ones doing it. They must be multiple groups simultaneously.
That's right. It depends on the day, too. If we're doing starting times off the first tee, they can start at 1 and just go and stay ahead. But if we have an event like we did this morning, they've got to go off into different places because of the shotgun start that starts at 8:30. So they get multiple groups that go to different holes and go from there.
And they have to stay ahead of those groups.
And they got to stay ahead. And, you know, there's also some areas like we have here in a residential area where there's noise ordinance. So we have to stay away from certain areas until 7 a.m.
All right, let's get some questions have come in from various listeners, and I thought it would be fun to talk to you about them. And the first one is someone who is saying that they hit their woods really well, but they can't hit irons at all. And I'm like, iron play versus hybrids and woods. Why? I would think that the driver is probably the hardest club to hit.
Not necessarily. I think the hardest clubs to hit are probably the long irons or even the 3-wood off the ground. Those are probably the most difficult clubs to hit.
Why?
Well, there's several factors. For one, sometimes somebody's swing type or shape can determine whether they are better at irons or better at woods. If you have a very descending blow on your swing, descending angle, well, irons might be better for you. You might a wood needs to be more of a shallow approach, a sweeping type swing. You also have a hosel that's on that iron, and you can hit a golf ball on the heel of a golf club, and a wood, you're going to be fine. And an iron, you're going to be in some trouble. So, you know, there's different factors. I think you only find that the better golfers really descend into the ball the way they should. Mm-hmm. So the higher the handicap, the better, or I think they're happier they'll be with their woods because you don't have to descend. It's more of a sweeping. People tend to jump up and look up and try to lift the ball up. Well, you can kind of get away with that with a wood. So I think, you know, when you tee it up with a driver, it's funny. Some people have a more difficult time with the driver because it's so long and it's so cumbersome that they have a hard time getting through it and they slice the ball. Where others, the ball's teed up, so it is easier for them because they don't worry about hitting the ground. They feel free to swing. So it really depends on an individual and sometimes what those individual flaws are in their swing. It can determine it.
So you really need to develop different swings for your irons as you do have with your woods.
Yeah, here's a perfect example. When I first started hitting it hybrid, I didn't hit it very well, and I kept wondering why. And it wasn't until I figured out that it was an iron. It was more like an iron. You've got to hit this on a descending blow. I moved the ball back a little bit in my stance to create more of an iron type hit. And my intent, which I think is a very important thing in golf, is your intent. My intent was to swing and hit down on the ball instead of trying to sweep it and committing to my intent. Yeah. Once I did that, it's my favorite club in the bag. I love hybrids because of that.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of times it's intent.
I've actually considered recently, I've been struggling with my 5-iron. Because I have a hybrid for my 4 and my 3-iron, so, and I love them.
Guess what's coming?
and I'm really considering getting rid of my. So right now I have driver, 3-wood, 2 hybrids, and then 5, 6, 7.
Let me ask you a question before you go on. Why do you have a 3-wood? Or do you like your 3-wood?
I love my 3-wood.
Okay.
So, but here's the interesting point. So Jesse Ortiz of Bobby Jones Golf.
Yeah.
He was, I went down, it's about an hour away in Hayward where his shop is, and he made me these clubs. And he said, I'm gonna make this club for you, but based on your numbers on that you provided me once you got fitted, I'm gonna make it more like a 4-wood. But you can tell everyone it's a 3-wood.
Good for him.
So
he answered. You answered my question. You don't really hit a 3-wood. 3-woods are very difficult to hit, and by the makeup of your set, I'm thinking if you like all those clubs, there's going to be a big difference between your 3-wood and your hybrid. So there's got to be something in the middle. So that 4-wood helps that. It moves it a little closer. So two things are going to happen. You may not hit it as far as the 3-wood, but I guarantee you're going to be more consistent, and that's much more important.
And I'll tell you that I recently have put the driver in the bag for the first 4 or 5 holes because I'm so much more confident with my 3-4-wood, 4-3-wood.
Yeah.
And it just gives me more confidence as I go on. And then as I feel like I've got my swing and I know where I'm going, I'll pull out the driver.
Smart play.
Thank you. But golf smarter. So, yes. But I don't, you know, obviously on my driver, I'm going to tee it up very high, and my hybrid, my 3-4-wood. Okay. Now you're going to get me crazy on the wood, you know, I'll tee them up very low. Like if I'm going to tee up,
where's your driver go? Right, left, high, low. What's your problem?
Well,
with your driver?
If I start with it, it's going to go right.
Okay.
It's going to go right. Sometimes a nice fade. My ball has a tendency to fade to the right.
Why does it go to the right?
You're the instructor.
I'm asking you. I've never given you a lesson. Have you taken lessons?
Well, kind of. No. Yeah.
Yeah?
So,
and you don't have that answer?
Why it goes to the right is because I don't know. I think that it's because I'm going inside out.
Outside in.
Outside in.
You're most likely swinging to the left of your target, and your club face is open.
Mm-hmm.
So now you got to determine.
I have a problem with my wrist breaking, too.
You got to determine why you're not closing that club face and why you're swinging what they call over the top or, you know, to the left of your target.
The lessons that I've been working on recently, I'm just learning how to roll my hands over.
Good for you.
Impact. That's
good for you.
That's like, wow. And that's a hard one because then I'm able to keep the right angle on the club farther down and then make the roll over as it gets low.
Just remember this,
when
too.
When am I getting lessons
Slicers
from you?
Tend to call me. I'll give you a lesson anytime.
Oh, okay.
Anytime. We have a hitting bay at our facility with video and a flight scope, which is a launch monitor, and it's radar-based, and it gives you all the details of club face, angle, swing path and ball speed, club head speed, you name it, spin rate. So it's a great tool to have, but I can tell you without even seeing your swing, most slicers, and I'm going to put you in a general category, most slicers rotate their chest too quickly through the ball and not their wrists and forearms or hands and forearms.
Well, that's the other thing I've been working on is my hip turn on the backswing.
Okay.
And then on
increasing
my follow through, having one.
Okay.
Right? I wasn't turning.
Where do your shoulders aim at impact?
At impact?
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
Left.
Yeah, it probably opened.
They should, that's right.
And they should be at.
They should be square.
Square. Yeah. This is so much fun.
And that would hopefully allow you to turn your hands over. Once you turn your shoulders way too past your target line or left of your target line, you are not going left unless. You will with a short iron because it's easy to keep the club head of the short club up with your rotation.
Mm-hmm.
But because the club is so long for the driver, your body will turn much quicker than your hands can get the club head squared up.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So there's a good drill to feel the right motion.
And I would love to hear it.
What you need to do is get the distance away from the ball that you want to hit the ball. Okay, put your feet so they're touching together. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And now take your right foot and move it straight back as if you're in a walking motion. Okay.
So you're going to putting it on the ground?
You're putting it on the ground.
Flat?
Flat.
Okay.
Both feet.
Okay.
So your feet were together.
Up.
Yep. Your feet were together initially, and you move your right foot directly back. Now, this is for a right-handed golfer.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. And I want you to take a full swing without either foot leaving the ground, especially your right heel. And what that's going to do is it's going to lock your hips down on the follow-through, so it's going to be very difficult to rotate your body through.
Right.
It's going to force you to swing your arms and hands more, which is something that when I get somebody who does that, I want them to feel like they're using more arms and hands on the downswing. And I know that you hear about the rotation and rotate, rotate. But I don't think slicers use their hands and forearms enough. They don't snap their club head through.
Interesting.
So try that drill. And if you're a left-hander, the left foot goes back.
Okay. All right. So the
key
element,
though, is to keep that right heel down if you're a right-hander in that swing.
And the goal here is to be square at impact, not having the
hips. You're
going
to be forced to. You're going to be forced to use your arms and hands a lot more.
That's what it feels like as I'm doing this.
That's right.
That I'm not going to be able to
turn. And the key, you
got to
keep your balance, too, when you swing. You hit that ball.
And that's always been a problem
Keep
for
your
me.
Balance.
On my driver especially, it's always been a problem where I'll take it, you know, I'll finish my swing and I'll be four or five steps in a different direction from where I started after I swing because I'm swinging too hard.
A drill for that is the same one. Make sure that your feet are together. Put your right foot back. You could even, to make it real difficult, put the right foot directly behind the left foot, both on the ground, not touching each other, in the same distance away as if you were walking. And then put both feet down and try to take a golf swing and watch how difficult it is to keep your balance. But if you get to the point where you can take a full swing, hit the ball, and keep your balance, count to two or three after you swing, watch how much better your swing gets because you're forcing yourself to swing around a center. So it's very good. You won't find yourself, most people fall away from it to their back foot. And you'll find yourself losing your balance quite a bit initially. But it's a real good drill to feel your head still and have you swing around a center.
All right, we got to figure out how we can get a video of this, of that drill.
Sure.
Yeah. We're going to have to put that up.
We'll put you on it.
No, you. You're going to be giving the instruction.
I'll swing. I do it all the time, and I'll show you how to do it and keep your balance.
Awesome. Oh, that's great. So what is it? What does it mean when occasionally I'll just, on a driver tee shot, I'll just pop the ball up?
Well, what like happens also when you come over the top is you create a very steep angle of attack. That's right. So you're coming over the top, you create a steep angle of attack, and when you hit basically down on the ball goes straight up in the air.
And how many times have I played with people who do the same thing and go, oh, I teed it up too high?
That's not the reason. I'm sure it's possible, but for the most part, it's an over-the-top move and a steep angle of attack. And what you want when you're hitting a driver, you actually want to be on the upswing. That ball, that's why we put it up by the inside of our left heel if you're a right-handed golfer, is so you want to hit this thing just as it starts the upswing of your arc.
Yeah, there is. I do have one video on Golf Smarter TV where he's how to hit straight drives, a teacher up in Lake Tahoe. And he said, you know, get your feet together at the ball, address the ball, put your feet together, take a very little step to the left with your left foot, mm-hmm. and then a big step
That's
to the
correct.
Right.
That's exactly what you want to do.
Yeah, so if mm-hmm. this is an issue for you, you should definitely look at the video on a Golf Smarter TV on our YouTube channel. I need to take a quick break here for our sponsor. It is audible.com. Thank you very much for your continued support. Yes, it's true. This episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audible would like to provide the Golf Smarter community an opportunity to try an audiobook for free from their enormous library. And the first one's going to be free, and you can select anything you'd like. But if you'd like a suggestion, I would like to make one. So because we recently talked about the and watched the 2013 U.S. Open being played at Marion Golf Club, why don't we look back to the story that everyone was talking about, not just the photograph, but Ben Hogan's astonishing victory in the 1950 U.S. Open played at Marion, where Hogan's battered legs could barely carry him on the 36-hole final day. legendary sports writer Red Smith characterized Hogan's comeback from a near-fatal automobile crash in February of 1949 as, quote, the most remarkable feat in the history of sports. And the crowning moment of that comeback was his victory in 1950. Well, the book we're going to recommend is called Miracle at Marion, the inspiring story of Ben Hogan's amazing comeback and victory at the U.S. Open. And it also was named, this book was the recipient of the USGA's 2010 Herbert Warren Wind Award for the best golf book of the year. And it tells a stirring story of Hogan's valiant triumph over adversity. It's 11 hours long. It's written by David Barrett and narrated by Richard Allen. And it could be yours free when you sign up for a new Audible account, which you can cancel after the first month. And your first book is still free. So if you'd like to check out the book Miracle at Marion, and I don't mean check out like a library, I mean listen to it. It's your free audiobook. It's the one you can choose. All you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Audible is A-U-D-I-B-L-E, audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. All right, Ken, now coming to the realization that hybrids are irons, they're
yes, just,
but they're not playing like woods. And you have to have a different swing. You have to develop two kinds of swings. Mm-hmm. You can't have the same swing.
That's right.
That's not easy to do.
No, it's not.
What is the difference?
Well, I think a lot of times it's intent. And remember, you're putting the ball forward for a wood, so you want to hit a sweeping type motion. And I think the big thing with irons is I think people can get away from the woods because it is at the bottom of the swing's arc or with a driver on the way up. And I think that the average golfer does not hit down on the ball. They swing up on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes an iron very difficult. So intent has to change. And I think another drill that's very good is if you put a tee in the ground about an inch past the ball, right in front of the ball, about an inch, and make sure that the tee is about grass level or even a little lower. And I want you to not only hit the golf ball, but I want you to knock the tee out of the ground. So the tee is barely going to be above the ground.
And so, wait, with which club is this?
Any iron.
Any iron. Okay.
Any iron. I want you to make sure that you take so that the divot goes forward. Now this, what it does is it gives you something visual to go after, and it changes your intent. And I believe wholeheartedly in intent. If you try to lift the ball, that's what you're going to do. You're going to try to get the ball in the air. Your body's going to come up. You're going to lift your hands up. If you change your intent and say, I'm going to hit the tee beyond the ball, I'm going to make the divot beyond the ball, you can change the mechanics of your swing by changing your intent. I do it a lot in the bunker with people, too. I do it with chip shots. Change their intent, and they hit better shots. We didn't talk about the mechanics, but yet their mechanics changed. So I think that's a very good drill when you're on the ground and you're having trouble making a divot, is to just put that tee, put that little carrot out there and go after it, and do it until you start knocking that tee out of the ground. And you watch the difference. You'll compress the ball. You'll hit it farther. You'll hit it more solid. You won't believe how good it feels.
It's the whole concept of little ball, big ball versus big ball, hitting big ball, little ball, big ball being earth.
That's right.
And the little ball. Yeah. So you want to hit a little ball, then the big ball.
Yes.
And it is such a hard thing for the average golfer, from what I witness and from what I experience, to get a good divot.
We don't grow up. Well, obviously the people that start playing golf early get it. It's easy to learn when you're younger. But when you're older, it's harder to learn. And also, when you're growing up, you don't play any other sport. I guess maybe hockey. But you don't really play any other sport where you're swinging down to make the ball go up.
Right.
You know, baseball isn't meant to hit that way. You don't play tennis that way. So I think it's very unorthodox.
All right. Now I want to get back to you're real high on the word intent.
Yeah.
Okay. Intent is not getting the ball onto the green. That's not what you mean?
I think that's another level of it. If your intent is to get the ball on the green
intent,
instead of saying, I don't want to go in the bunker.
Yeah.
You know, I think that there's also that positive thought too, you know.
Well, if you got the bunker in your head at all, that's not a positive thought. Don't
exactly.
even think about it.
Exactly.
Get it out of there.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. So define intent in what you mean when you're talking about using your wood versus the hybrid, and you know what your intent is on the swing. You know, you have different types of swings.
I do. And when I have an iron in my hand, I am trying to purposely stay down and take a divot. I can see a blade of grass beyond the ball, and my intent is to swing down through that grass.
Do you aim when you're addressing, when you're at address, are you looking at the front of the ball, the back of the ball, the center of the ball? What are you looking at? What is, and is that your aim point?
It doesn't matter what I'm looking at because I don't see what I'm looking at. And you're going to look at me like, what?
Wait a minute.
Okay.
What?
Yeah, exactly. What I do before I take a swing is I pick a target. It could be a chimney. It could be a branch.
So now we're on pre-shot routine.
Yes. So I'm building the image that I want to swing at. If that chimney's above my flagstick or a tower on the hillside or a tree branch, or sometimes it has to be the flagstick itself, I'm looking at that and I'm building that image in my head. So when I finally look back down to the ball, I'm there for about a second or less, and I see that image because I'm swinging at the image in my head. I'm trying to stay totally positive.
So the ball is not the target.
Yeah, so no, I look at the ball, but I really am not seeing it. I mean, that's more of in my periphery because I still have that object in my head because I want to swing positively at something where I'm going. And that does a few things. It takes the mechanics out of my head. Too many people think mechanically and they think backwards when they're swinging and playing golf. Think backwards on the range. When you're on the golf course,
what does you mean think by think backwards?
Backswing.
Oh, okay.
Thinking of their backswing, their position, cocking the wrist, whatever they have to think of. I think that you need to think of that stuff on the range when you go play golf. You need to play golf and think forward. Always think forward when you're playing golf.
Are you an advocate of target golf?
Yes.
Focusing on that target?
Absolutely. Because, again, it takes mind off off your mechanics and trouble. There's people think of mechanics. They also think of, oh, no, there's out of bounds over there to the right. Oh, I got to stay away from that bunker. Yeah, don't hit it in the water, you know, that type of thing.
And I've always cracked up at that when you, and you just said, you've set me up perfectly. Don't hit it in the water. Don't hit it in the water. What are the last three words?
Hit it in the water. Exactly. Yeah, and that's why I think that building that image in your head and swinging at it, it does several things, and they're all positive. It keeps mechanics out of your head. It makes you think of forward, and you don't think of hitting it someplace negatively. You think of hitting something authoritatively at a positive object. And I think that's very important. And you go ahead and think of other sports. When you're shooting a basketball up into a hoop, do you think of how you're cocking your arm back and the velocity?
You're looking at the rim.
No, you're looking at your target and shooting at it. And I think we do that in most sports, but golf, we don't. And one of the reasons why we don't is we can think about it before we swing.
Well, right. I mean, I have a book over there, and we've done this show. The head pro over at Pinehurst did this book on, and I think intentional putting, but it's he looks at the hole. He doesn't look at the ball. I mean, he gets it all set, and then he just, you know, he does. Why are we looking down at the ball when that's not the target?
Yeah. That's still a rarity to see. People practicing like that. I see people practicing like that, but I don't know if I've really seen anybody on the golf course doing it. That's a good question. Why? I'm not quite sure.
But would you ever try to putt like that?
No, but I can understand the practice of either looking at the hole or even better yet, looking at the hole, going back to the ball and closing your eyes. I like that.
Whoa. What?
Closing your eyes.
When?
I'm talking about practicing now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I think it's important to get the feel. Uh-huh. And when you take the vision out of it, you have to feel the stroke and feel how much you're swinging and so on. So I think that's very good because I think we sometimes allow ourselves to use our vision too much and it can fake you out. And I think it's a comfort to have yet another sense working for you.
So a lot of what you're talking about makes sense for somebody who's been playing golf for most of their life and they don't think about it. Then you get to a person, and there are so many people, and I receive emails from people, I just started playing golf, or I've just picked it up again after being away for 20 years, or, you know, I'm about to retire and I'm thinking of playing golf. A lot of that, okay? Mm-hmm. So you get people who start out at a different part of life, and so they're much more in their head than a kid, right? A ball just landed in my backyard.
The hazards of living on a golf course.
I rarely ever hear it hit the it must have hit the cart path or something, because I'm so glad my wife isn't here, because I've convinced her that we'll never get it.
Yeah.
Wow. So so when someone like myself who started playing at 40, okay, and then I played for a number of years before I took my first lesson, and now all of a sudden the mechanics are just driving me nuts, because how do I mean, I've got a nice pre-shot routine, I focus on a target, I step up to the ball and try not to think about it, but there are now all these things, and it's not easy when you've been through as much life as you've been and you understand process to knock that stuff out of your head. How do you do that?
Very good question. That's a book of psychology. I mean, really, that's the mind game, which there's books, you know. That's a great question. You do have to separate range from golf course, and you can be analytical as you want on the range, but you need to be free spirited on that golf course, and you need to find a way to do it. And I think that if you can think of that target, you'll do a better job of it. Some people are also just built analytically. You know, they rip apart everything in detail, and you're not going to change that.
Right. Right. Are there people who that your experience that are new to taking lessons as an adult, and they are not analytical after they walk away? I mean, don't you kind of test them? It's like, what did you learn? What's your takeaway today?
And, I think when you take a lesson, and I took about 15 years ago, I took a bunch of tennis lessons just to be on that side of the ball, and also I had people that played tennis and golf, because I was at a country club and I just wanted to see the differences between ball contact and everything. And what I found was something, I took away something different than I thought I would. I was thinking of where my right foot, my left foot, where my racket should be, when I should take it back behind me, the ball went, you know, I held onto the racket so tightly. I was terrible because I was thinking so mechanically. So I think when you get involved at our age with a new sport, that's what you're going to do. And it's only time that's going to get you separated from all those mechanics to feeling the game. Because I think you need to get to a point where you're feeling it more than you're just thinking mechanically. I don't think you can help it. Once you take a lesson, you're going to be thinking about it.
Well, and then you go, you take your lesson, and you, because you're paying for lessons now, you're diligent about practicing, which is not always easy to do when life gets in the way.
Right.
It's more about, oh, I have an opportunity to play golf. Great, I'll hit a bucket of balls before that.
Yeah.
But practicing in between is not always an easy thing to do. And so now I've gone, I remember what I had in my lesson, I've been thinking about it at night, I go and I practice and I come out to the course, and now a couple weeks go by and I feel like I'm starting to get the hang of it. I go back for my next lesson and I'm doing everything wrong. I got to start all over again. I hate this game. And so it's like, no, what are you doing? What is that? You're not getting it right. And then there's one more thing he wants to add. And then one more thing he wants to add. It's like, how do I break this down? How do I keep this all straight? I want to.
How often do you practice? You answered the question a few seconds ago about practice and making it difficult, and it is very difficult. If you're before kids in career or after kids in career, you've got a chance to practice, and you have to practice a lot. This isn't that bucket of balls before you play.
Yeah.
You need to go 5-6 times a week and hit plenty of golf balls. And I've got one story about a guy I used to work with. He was on the PGA Tour back in the 60s, and he was one of the best college players ever. And at the time of him being on the tour, Ben Hogan said that he was one of the best players on the tour. He just didn't know it, which he didn't know how to take it, whether it was a compliment or not. But anyways, he asked Ben Hogan, he was switching his grip and he was just making it a little weaker. So for him, he was moving his right hand, rotating it to the left a little bit. And he asked Ben Hogan how long it would take for it to be natural. And Ben Hogan told him a year. This is a guy who plays for a living and he practices every day for several hours. So if it's going to take a guy...
Well, Tiger Woods is a perfect example of
exactly.
that.
Exactly. He switches his swing and he disappeared for a couple of times for a year or so.
And more.
Yeah. So, I mean, you don't want to discourage the average Joe out there, but... You're all average Joes, it is golf, and it's very difficult to change. And when you have it become natural is very difficult. What I do tell people is when I give them something to change, I said, okay, for a long time, you're going to have to do this consciously and you're going to have to exaggerate it. Because in most cases, I'll probably get one or two people a year of all the lessons I give that when I say take it more to the inside, they yank it way to the inside. Usually when I make them change something, I have to tell them the expression in life is you give an inch and somebody takes a foot. Well, when I give lessons, I have to ask for a foot almost always to get an inch. And it's great to have video to back it up because people feel dramatic change and they say, well, I did. I shortened my swing like you asked me to. And then I show them on the video and they haven't
exactly
at
the
all,
same.
You know, or it's been so incremental. They feel like they've made a half a backswing. So I think that in most cases, people have to do it consciously and exaggerate it for a long time. And you need, this day and age, you can video yourself very easily. You know,
oh my gosh, your phone and there's apps
your
on your phone.
Apps,
you can
exactly.
send it right to a teacher, and
you can do that pretty simply. So I would recommend doing that. Now there's some things that people aren't too keen to see. They don't swing enough or know the game enough to know what the problem is. But I think if we told you something simple like, hey, you got to have your swing shortened, and it should be about at this point in your swing, I think they can do that pretty easily on their own.
Well, when you leave a lesson, you're at the level of conscious incompetence.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the goal is to get to unconscious competence.
Yeah.
Right? So you're not thinking about it and you can do it. But
and that's a long haul.
There's many levels between unconscious or conscious incompetence and unconscious competence.
And you better know when you leave a lesson what you're doing wrong and what you need to do to correct it. And it might be different for different people. You know, we're all different. I have a saying that says, if you think of chocolate ice cream and you hit the ball well, then that's your thought. And what I mean by that is I can tell four people four different things. You never know what's going to work for you.
Well, that's
it could be intent. It could be swing thought. It could be imagery. It could be something you feel. You just never know.
Right. And I think that as a golf instructor that you have to, it's not one size fits all.
Exactly.
That you have to understand what each person is doing.
I'll try the most common thing that works and then I'll just go down the list and I'll just keep going, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. Well, you know, I knew what was going to happen when you got here. I put two things on my my agenda for us to discuss. And that was one. But I added one since even before you walked in the door. So we have more to talk about, and I would love for you to stick around so that we can get to a members-only episode for next, so we can continue the conversation. You got time
sure,
for that?
Sure, I've got time. You got it.
All right, buddy. Well, thank you very much. And if you want to hear Ken Doherty, the head golf professional at Marin Country Club, for at least another half hour, but knowing Ken and I, it could be up to an hour, please, if you're not already, join Golf Smarter for members only at golfsmarter.com. Ken, thanks again. We'll
My
talk
pleasure.
To you next.
Thank you.
I came across an interesting story that I wanted to share. And for those of you who've been listening to the podcast over the past year or so, you may recall a couple of guests discussing aimpoint putting. And then just recently, John Grun instructed us on vector putting, claiming a significant difference. Aimpoint has settled a lawsuit with vector putting. And here are the highlights of the story. And if you'd like to read the whole story, I'll post the link at the blog at golfsmarter.com. To recap, here's what it said. Aimpoint Technologies has agreed to settle its lawsuit against Vector Putting LLC for a consent final judgment, a permanent injunction, and a retraction of incorrect statements. So as part of the settlement agreement, Vector has made the following statement. To correct or set the record straight, Vector Putting LLC, Michael Shee and David Balbi, started their business utilizing Aimpoint Technologies data and methods. Aimpoint Technologies business is not based on Templeton methods or calculations, and statements by Vector Putting claiming or inferring that Aimpoint Technologies has copied or utilized Templeton are incorrect. So then I sent this article to John Grun, whose father-in-law is a former judge, and here's how he responded to my letter about the article. Not about money, but about the source of his calculations? If the case went to court, he was going to have to reveal his basis for calculations. That was avoided. Templeton's calculations, theories, have been public knowledge for 20 plus years. There you go. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, or interesting news stories, please click on the Hey Fred button and let me know about it at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.